I'm Ivy.
I'm Rachel, and we are Swords and Sapphics, a podcast all about representation, queer media, women with a capital W, and a little bit of nonsense.
So start sharpening your swords, sip your tea, and join us as we obsess over the wonderful beings that are women.
Hello.
Hello.
What are we talking about today?
Oh, that's a good question.
I never know the answer to it.
And yet I always ask, can you answer me?
Well, we've been watching a few queer films recently, so we can talk about that. We've been playing a few queer games recently, so we can talk about that.
Yeah. Well, a few. One.
Well, one. Yeah. I guess A Juggler's Tale is queer in the other way, derogatory way.
Yeah.
And weird.
Yeah. Extremely weird, and I loved it.
Yeah. And as always, book Twitter's been popping off. Kate Corrane made her return as the Twitter's villain of the month. So we can spill some tea.
We can do that. What have you been enjoying lately?
It's a hard question in my current mood. What have I been enjoying recently? What have I been reading recently? Was that the question?
Yes, basically.
Okay. As an explanation, my dog was just attacked, so you're not going to get much sense from me today if you're listening. But he's fine, by the way. But I'm still not. Anyway, what have I been reading today?
Not today, this week.
I've been reading this week. Oh, I've been reading A Sweet Sting of Salt by Rose Sutherland. Yes. And we was kindly given arcs for this. And we get to talk to Rose for an episode later. And not that much later. In a week.
Well, for us. For people who listen to it in
a bit in longer. April.
Yeah.
Yeah. It comes out in April. And it is a sapphic tale. Mm-hmm. We haven't got that far into it yet.
Yeah.
So definitely no spoilers from us yet. But I do believe there will be Selkies involved. So
I presume, yeah.
It's feeling very whimsical. It's set by the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's set in the past. Is it in like 1800s?
Yeah, I think so.
That century. And did I say she's a midwife?
No.
She's a midwife. The main character's a gay midwife. She helps deliver babies. And yeah, it's good so far. Really good, like, tone setting, and not something that I've read a lot of before. So I'm excited to get deep into
it. It already made me cry in a tram.
Yeah. I love midwives. No. There's something. I'm not a maternal person. I don't want to carry a baby myself, but it must be. It's such an interesting job, and it's always fun when there's like that kind of career, especially in like a historical setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
And there's also a lot of talk about like postpartum depression.
Yeah.
Not in exact words, but Jean, the main character, talks about, first of all, her mom died because she wasn't well after giving birth to her. And then she mentioned a few times how it's important to check on new moms because sometimes they're very different.
Yeah.
Just very nice.
It's good. It's very refreshing to have that. It's not usually mentioned.
Yeah.
And you would especially not think it to be mentioned in like a historical work where women were just kind of cast off as dramatic and hysterical. So
it's still not mentioned now. So like, especially
now, exactly. Yeah.
Apparently I found out that during like postpartum depression, you get like hallucinations. I saw someone saying that they literally saw their husband like do something to the baby, but what the husband was next to them the entire time, but they like, it felt real to them. And stuff like that. It's insane. It's really terrifying.
I do believe that, like, the female body is just designed to kill itself. And not in a cynical way, but like, what's all this about then? Why do you do all these things?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
And not great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would, honestly, I would be, if I ever did carry a baby, I would be very terrified of, like, because my mental health ain't well anyways, like, the hard part isn't over when you push out the kid.
Yeah. It is terrifying, yeah.
There is so, we actually started compiling a list of things that Ivy learns every day, because she learns, she genuinely, literally learns something new every day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was that you bleed for like up to 6 weeks after the birth, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, then they say that you can have sex again after 6 weeks, and until then you just bleed. Which is like fun.
Oh, because something to do with the blood vessels, isn't it?
Yeah, because it was, what was it? I think there was some like something connecting the baby in the thing to the uterus, and then like it sheds again, like basically like during a menstruation, but like just much more heavily.
Yeah.
For 6 weeks.
We need to put a trigger warning before we start talking about this.
Every time I'm uploading the podcast, I'm like, not for children. Yes, like some warning stuff.
We're gonna have to start doing content warnings. Yeah, having a uterus is one big content warning.
Yeah, not to mention that we recently found out that it does not look like the way we thought it does.
I know. It's all squished together like a little alien.
Yeah. Like, I mean, on the picture, you see like the head of a bull, but it's not, that's not how it is.
Yeah, no, it's not all laid out nice and flat, like a nice little knitting project.
Yeah.
All squished together inside your body. Okay, what else have I been reading? I've been rereading the Hunger Games books with Tatiana Maslany's audiobook narration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful, and I love Tatiana Maslany, and I'm on Catching Fire, and even though I definitely read this book at least twice, because it was my favorite book in the series, and I remember getting it and just treasuring it, but I still get chills with that scene in District, is it 11?
Oh,
in
yeah.
Rue's District,
yeah.
When like the uprising starts to begin, and they all like salute her with the three fingers. I do think these books will be classics. Oh, I started God Killer.
Oh yes, you did.
By Hannah Kane. It's so good. I was still in my fantasy groove from Sarah J. Maas, and this, I started this, but I needed to get to ARCs, so I have something waiting for me when I've finished. And it's really good. It's like a society that kind of was like immersed with the gods before, and then there was a war with the gods, and now they're kind of banned and taboo. And she's obviously a god killer, and she has a prosthetic leg. She's sapphic. She belches. Like, I love. She's tough and like she's sassy. It's so great. She's like the. She's the best.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's multi-point of views. I didn't think it would be that many, because it's relatively short for a fantasy at like 290 pages, I want to say, nearly 300. But it's so good.
It
really
is standalone.
Good. I think there's going to be another one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think when I clicked on Goodreads, it was going to be a series.
Okay.
So I'll be excited for it. Oh. It's really... Enjoying it is really good. How about you? Have you been reading?
Well, I think I talked about Ruthless Vows last time. Mm-hmm. And then I was reading Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies on audiobook, which was amazing, of course. And then right away I went into Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
Which was the second book. It was amazing. 10 out of 10. I absolutely love it. I miss it already. And there's supposed to be third book, which I'm very excited for. Anyway, what else I've been reading? I also started the... I keep forgetting the title, so I'm calling it the salt thing.
A sweet sting of salt.
Yeah, that was... And today I started Bride by Ellie Hazelwood.
You did, my plan yeah.
Is to finish it today because I just love Ellie Hazelwood.
Get it. I still haven't read anything by her, but Bride is for sure the one that has drawn me in the most. But that has something to do with the little drama that we will talk about later.
What have you been watching?
I'm still in Modern Family. Though I'm on the last season, I think I have just a few episodes left. I'm not ready to say goodbye because they literally raised me and I love them. And Abbott's Elementary is back, so I'm watching that weekly. And that's really it. Other than the movies that we're going to talk about later, that's all I watch.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm back in Grays. I'm nearly at Station 19 now. I met Miss Andy... Herreras.
Without
Herrera.
The
M. And I'm in love with her. And I said to Ivy, am I just expected to be offered this woman in a firefighter's uniform and not immediately go and watch it? And apparently I am expected to do that, but I don't like it.
Have to do some, I guess I'm...
And I went back to Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I love you, Beth Dunn. I found out some juicy gossip about why Beth and Jamie don't get on. And then Jamie found out that, spoiler alert, he's adopted because his father was a serial killer. And I just love to see him suffer. It's what he deserves. But I went in there for Luke Grimes. And now Rip Wheeler is the love of my life, I'm afraid. I still love Casey, but... Now I want a cowboy romance.
What have you been playing lately?
Oh, man. I've been playing something wonderful.
Yeah.
So those who know me know my favorite part of a game is, like, riding around or just in a completely chill way. Like, if I had Grand Theft Auto, I'd be abiding by the rules. There would be no theft involved. I would just be driving around in my car. So in this game, that's what you get to do. And it's called Lake, and it's like a narrative. It has a narrative in it, where this woman called Meredith, she's in like her 40s, which is great in itself, I feel like. It's kind of like a Hallmark movie. She goes back to her hometown and she takes over her dad's postal duties as a postman.
Yeah.
So you get to ride around in a postman van. And deliver post.
Yeah.
And there are characters there. And you kind of get friendships. And you can get some romance. And the best part was that you can romance a girly from the video shop.
Yep.
Her name is Angie and I love her. But she left me.
Yeah.
So I don't love her that much. But I... It was great because it's set in the 80s, so I thought for sure it wouldn't be queer, and then I kept getting these hints that Angie was flirting with me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, and then we got to kiss her in a car. Yeah. I was like, okay, it is queer. Mm-hmm. We was blessed on this day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just came out on Nintendo, but it's been out on Steam for a while now, I think.
Yeah
so then I made Ivy download it.
Yeah, by buying it for me.
Oh, yeah. That too.
You've read that already?
Yeah. I'm a sugar mama.
Yeah. It took me 2 days. But it was amazing, yeah.
I know. It's not a massively long gameplay. And for Nintendo, the graphics kept kind of pixelating a little bit. Oh, but... You get to turn the radio on when you get in the van.
Yeah.
There's some real bangers on there. I think the songs were made for the game.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily the most 80s songs I've ever heard, but they are bangers. I've been singing them all week.
I get it.
It's a good game. It's a really good game.
It was like, it's like if Mail Time wasn't set in a forest and you was just actually a 40-year-old white woman going back to the suburbs. But no, but the scenery, we need to, the scenery is so pretty. It's set in Oregon in a small town and there's mountains everywhere. It's just, it's so cozy and escapist. Oh yeah, there's foxes and deer.
And deer. Yeah. Yeah.
And porch swings.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What have you been playing?
Well, other than that, I also played The Juggler's Tale, which is a very short, I would say it's a cozy game. It's a little on the creepy side, which I really enjoyed. It's like very cute and adorable, but extremely creepy. And I really loved it. And you play as a puppet, and the puppeteer is narrating the story. And in the story, at the beginning, you're like part of a circus because you're a juggler and you want to see the world. And so you escape the circus master or whatnot. And you have to like figure out how to keep escaping and trying to find your way throughout the world. And it was very quick. My great idea was starting to play it at like 11 o'clock and I stopped at 2:30. So yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. It was really fun. Really cute.
She made me download it.
I did. It's one of those games that's constantly on sale on Nintendo Store. And was very cheap. And it was very much worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun.
I was doing good. Like, I was back on, like, the big game fix with Red Dead Redemption. And then you started playing Juggler's Tale, and now I'm back to just wanting all the indie games there and the cozy ones.
Same. So, of course, because I finished one game, I bought, like, three more. And then Ray found the like for me. So I still have many games to play, and I'm really excited to get to them. I feel like I'm once again back into the small games, which is weird because I think, like, last year around this time, we also got a lot into the little... into the short games.
It checks out because my brain does that thing where, like, I'm always in the mood from what I did exactly this time last year. Like, I've been really in the mood for The Last of Us, and then I realized that I just finished watching The Last of Us this time last year.
I get it. It's the same, like, I was watching Grace around like September of previous year. So last year I was rewatching it because, like, it was the same time. And the same with Office. I watch it every Christmas, basically. Yeah. To me, that's my Christmas show. Yeah. But I'm really enjoying those. Yeah. It feels good because I also been reading more a lot now. And it feels like I'm back into being me because I've been, like, missing these very integral part of me.
Yeah.
That's great.
You get it. And it's also just nice to play games that you know you can finish quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
Not because you want them to be over quickly, but just because, like, I'm really bad. Because I'm such a mood player, I never finished, like, I've not finished Skyrim, and I've had that, like, 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's nice to kind of cleanse the palate with a shorter game where you get a satisfying ending as well.
Yeah. And other than that, of course, Fortnite. We've been doing very well on Fortnite lately. Let's talk about that for a minute.
We have.
One day, we won three times after each
in
other.
In a row.
That has never happened. The next day, we won twice. I think we had like one game between that we didn't win, but we were like third. Yeah. Yesterday, we won also, I think.
We did.
Yeah.
We did. Yeah. It makes me wary because, like, we also go through a lot of periods where we don't even get into the top 10 that often.
That's true.
So I'm scared of what might come soon. But we're nearly at a new season.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, we know that we're doing the best when we have quests to focus on.
Yeah.
Every single time, because we don't pay attention that we actually are the last ones. And then it's a little surprise when we win.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
And it's good. We've been looking out for Kesha because Kesha's now playing Fortnite with the Lady Gaga skin, which is very iconic.
So that's like a quest in its own, right?
It is, yeah.
thought we watched Bottoms.
We did watch Bottoms.
And we watched Good Grief.
We did watch Good Grief.
What? The vibes of the movies don't match at all.
No, no. But the common denominator is that they're both queer.
Yeah.
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 And we enjoyed them both very much.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, though, I think I was expecting from the Good Grief, I was expecting something more gut-wrenching. Like, it was sad, and I enjoyed it a lot. But I think I was just expecting myself to cry for the entire 2 hours.
Yeah, I got that. Didn't.
But
so, yeah, for those who don't know, Good Grief is like,
it's about grief.
About grief and goodness. And it's written and produced and
directed, I think, also.
Directed and all the other things by Dan Levy of Schitt's Creek. So obviously, when we see Dan Levy, we want to watch Dan Levy. So,
yeah.
And he loses his husband, and then he kind of finds out his husband was having an affair. And it's more about like the exploration of how his friendship dynamics kind of are affected by that, and like the way that he has to move on from it. And I agree, I thought, I didn't cry actually.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it was because it was set in this glossy backdrop where they were clearly rich. There was no, like, they had a lot of money. They was living in this amazing house in London and they had a Paris apartment. And I was like, wow, mental health, like money. I know you can be mentally ill and have money. When you have money, you can also do things to make you feel better, like move to the seaside or go to Paris.
Yeah.
And I think that was the one thing that I didn't really connect with through that.
Or take a break without the need to work and actually take care of yourself and your mental health. Yeah. Those little things, you know.
Yeah. And you can, like, and he was like a painter and illustrator, right? And he just stopped doing that with Gris. And he just could. He was like, nah, I like painting connects me to my grief. I don't want to feel it, so I won't.
Yeah.
And it was just very fascinating as some, like, an autistic person who's kind of stuck in this environment where nothing makes me feel better because, you know, I'm stuck at home and stuff. It was just that part I didn't connect with so much.
I guess maybe that's also why I, like, didn't feel that as much as I thought I would, because I really, to be fair, I went into it comparing it to Sorry for Your Loss, which Elizabeth Olsen stars in. She also produced it. It was like a short 2 seasons on Facebook Watch, and that one was like 3 months after her husband dies, and that was more, a lot more agony for me, because like she had to go back to work and she had to move back with her mom and her sister, and there were a lot of those relationships, and like while having like going through grief in the time where everybody around you like expects you to go back to normal, which also wasn't the case here, because they were really respectful of what he went through, and it was even a year later they were
like, it was like a very healthy, glossy take on grief. I don't think it was bad or like shallow. I think that there was like a lot of valid, I've never like suffered from that sort of grief myself, but like from what I can tell, it was fine. It was just a different perspective than what I was expecting. And and I did like that, not because Dan Levy probably would have written it perhaps with an inkling that he was going to play that character. Mm-hmm. And he wrote him with flaws in a way that, like, I got angry with him because, like, his friends took care of him for a year and then he was still, like, lost in his own journey and kind of didn't pay them any mind. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that a lot as a people pleaser. Like, I ended up empathizing a lot more for Thomas, who was played by that guy from Yesterday. Who's his name?
Oh, yeah, that's where he was from. I was like, I know him from somewhere. Yeah. I can't connect him. I connected literally everyone else.
Himesh Patel. Yeah. And because he was, they were exes as well. So I really was rooting for them, and they didn't, that, spoiler alert again, that wasn't, they didn't end up together. And I get why that was the case.
Yeah.
But it was very gentle to see a man taking care of another man, and like male friendship as well. Yeah. Even though they're supposed to be together.
I also think one thing that kept like bringing me out of the story was there was a lot of like really, really beautiful lines and metaphors, but it got like too artistic and too like that thing. It wasn't too real for me. Like,
yeah,
the way
you
they
don't
spoke
talk to strangers
yeah,
that way.
Yeah. It was one of those.
Yeah, and I love films like that. I love like seeing a more artsy take on human experience.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, you always know that it's a very poetic way of framing it, and not like the gritty, like realistic
Mm-hmm.
way that most people experience things.
Yeah. It was almost more like it gave me more vibes of like a theater play, which is more artistic like that than an actual movie.
Yeah, I think that I don't think it belonged with Netflix.
Yeah.
For
Yeah.
me,
It,
like with the usual dramas that we get on Netflix, like not to say Netflix is for like lower art or anything, but Netflix is usually a lot more straightforward in the story and how it's being told. I don't know.
It felt like an indie movie. And
Oh.
even on IMDb, I think the poster there is, it's like a painting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me find it.
I wonder who did those paintings, because they were gorgeous.
It's some of Dan's friend from Canada.
Oh, Canada.
It's
I
in
love.
the, yeah. Came from.
I don't know.
Because
Oh.
In Czech, it's Canada, so it's not that different.
Well, if you're from Canada, you're Canadian, so I guess so is that.
Oh yeah, maybe that's where I was going. Yeah, so it's like that, and it looks like a poster for a museum.
Yeah, I think that was the thing, maybe, like if I would have seen that poster.
Yeah.
Because I only really saw the thumbnails from Netflix.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have expected it to be more like that.
That's true.
But Dan Levy is like an amazing human being. Like he writes well, he directs well, he acts real. I didn't know what to expect of him in this, because like I'm used to see him as David Rose, like very like exaggerated. And even when we saw him in
Happiest Season.
Happy Season, he was like just the comedy relief.
Mm-hmm.
So to see him like in a very raw, solemn role was very interesting.
Yeah. Bottoms, on the other hand, to me felt like absolute fever dream. And I loved every minute of it. It was so insane.
It
and
was.
I kind of knew that going into it, because I knew it took us so long to watch, and it took me so long to like get to it properly, that I've seen a few spoilers and I knew how it would end with a mass murder. I was like, those are teenage girls playing by adults. How did that happen? Is that supposed to be a comedy? And then I was like, you know what? I don't care. I'm in.
It's so good. It gave me big Booksmart vibes. Like it was very kind of comedy driven, but yeah.
Yeah.
Again, like for those who don't know, it's like set in high school, and these queer women really want to date these other women in high school, so they do it under the guise of like a women's fight club, and it turns into something a lot bigger. And it's just absurd and great.
One of the scenes that made me like scream out in laughter, and even though it's extremely sad because that's a woman's experience, but they were sitting in a circle and were like, well, what was your, like, when did you get assaulted last time, or something like that. Or, and I was like, this is like, it's so funny in the vibes, but like, yeah. That's her life. Like, that's so normal. How is it so normal?
I know. They did that really well, like, make it comedic, but also really highlighting that it's a common women experience to be assaulted and treated like shit by men.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know that Ayo...
Everybody knows Ayo. Everybody knows her. Come on.
I didn't know she was in it. I've been watching The Bear and I'm obsessed with her now. But I didn't know she was in this one. And that was a pleasant surprise. She was playing a lesbian. And Nicholas Galitzine was there, who played in Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Whoever is his like manager is doing absolutely phenomenal job in like in his filmography. Like, it's the most insane one I've ever seen. Are you kidding me?
He could never be typecast.
No.
Because he's been everything. He's been a fucking Republican. He's been a gay prince. And he's been the stupid himbo jock.
And now he's going to be another gay prince. But yeah. In the historical settings.
With Vincent van Gogh from Doctor Who.
Yeah, and Julianne Moore as his mother. Are you kidding me?
And he's gonna be Harry Styles inspired rock star with Anne Hathaway.
And he was a prince in like the Amazon Prime Cinderella with Camila Cabello.
Yeah.
He sings Seven Nations Army then.
Did he?
Yeah, that's every time we play it on festival, I just see his face.
Yeah, he's an interesting human being. I just thought of when he dropped his handbag on the red carpet. He's so funny, man. Cigarettes.
He absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. He needs to be studied.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, whatever he's going to come with next, I'll be seated.
Oh, yeah.
I did, because I really hated Purple Hearts. And so afterwards, I was like, yuck, I don't want to see his face ever again. Like, I got like a visceral reaction, and I don't think did we connect him being in as the prince immediately?
Not immediately, we didn't know him.
So I don't know, something changed in me after Red White. I don't know. And it's weird.
But yeah,
his comedic timing was absolutely excellent, though.
Somebody said, just act silly and goofy. And he went with it. And he did do it.
The scene where Ayo hits him with the car, which, by the way, she just taps him. I've seen that scene, like, a bunch of times on Twitter. I watched it every time. I cry. I was sobbing with laughter every time. And even though I've seen it so many times, when we watched the movie, I had the same exact reaction as for the movie. It was so good.
It's so good. It was really funny.
Yeah.
It was just, it was like very farcical and satirical. And it was just really good, feel good comedy that has like kind of something underneath it that comments on dynamics in society. Yeah. And it just makes me happy that it's slowly becoming a more normal thing to have sapphics and gay men on screen as the main characters.
Yeah.
And a black woman as well.
Yeah.
A black lesbian woman.
Yeah.
And in Good Grief, Himesh Patel was there as well. Like,
and opposite Ayo was, I think her name is Havana or something like some. She's Asian. And also quite a gay character.
Yeah.
Honestly, she's the most divine human being I've ever seen. Every picture, just I'm like, that's not a real person. I don't know what she keeps drinking, what kind of water, but I mean, holy goddamn.
God has favorites.
Honestly. Yeah. Anyway, it was really, really fun movie.
It's, and it's like, because
we're getting more queer creators able to make those movies. It feels more authentic to the queer community as well. Like, we weren't the butt of the joke in this film.
Yeah.
Like,
even though, like, I really loved how they were the lame gays.
Oh, yeah.
It was just very funny.
Yeah. But they got their own back. They got to fight back.
Yeah.
They said, fuck the patriarchy.
They
left men slaughtered on the field in pineapple juice.
It was the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. It was so funny. And honestly, I really love the movie. I don't think I can say anything else. I'll just love everything about it.
It was really funny. And now I want to watch Booksmart again.
I know. I'll say one thing. Elizabeth Banks was the producer of it.
Yeah, that's surprising.
She also, like, I knew that. And I know she produces a lot of these type of movies, which are very, like, fun and very colorful.
Yeah.
But also have a lot of women in it. And, yeah. Like, this is exactly what Natalie Portman should be doing. If you have your own fucking production company, do not keep bitching about not having women director. Like, you can fucking hire them. Honestly. Yeah.
Shall we get into some tea?
Let's do it.
Okay. Do you have any tea?
Well, I have only a lot of the Taylor Swift one that I kept.
Tell us about Taylor Swift. We have beef with Taylor Swift. Swifties, switch off. You're not going to like what we have to say.
Like, I keep getting... I didn't care about her before, but now I get so angry every time I hear about her. I see her. I'm turning into the hater category, right? I am very much proud Taylor Swift hater. I'll say that.
So, and validly.
Yeah. And let's get into it. Her jet locks, once again, very high. A lot of celebrities were above her, but like taking 30 minutes flight when you can go buy a car for 40 minutes is an interesting choice.
To see her boyfriend.
I feel like she has to take much longer to get into a car, drive to an airport, have the flight, and then drive with the car from the airport. That, are you telling me that that doesn't take you longer than the 40-minute drive by car straight?
I know. But everybody's like, oh, but she had a stalker. And it's like, and she also has a humongous security team. I'm sure she'll be fine taking a private car instead of a private jet.
Also, the jet locks are very much not private. They're very much visible online. And
thank God.
Yeah. And you can look it up. And there is this college kid who does that. And he's posting that on Twitter. So he has more, he has few accounts. He's posting for more than Taylor Swift. And he's just taking it, sending, like, showing people her jet locks.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, are very much a public record. Because she's very too much busy to talk about Palestine or anything, she has time to sign a cease and desist letter to the college kid. And, of course, like, she can't sue him because he's not doing anything illegal, even though her team tried to, like, make it look like he's doing some stalkerish behavior, even though, once again, those are very much public record. One thing he did change after, of course, Swifties got to him, is that he's posting them now day later instead of on the day. Yeah, so that's how her PR team had to fix afterwards. And of course, another thing they had to fix with a really clearly staged photo is the way she ignored Celine Dion when getting her award. Even though Celine Dion is very much sick, she has, what is it, like, stiff person syndrome, I think?
Yes. Yeah.
So this very much, very, very sick, like, worldwide famous superstar came in to hand her the award, and she didn't even look at her.
No.
Good riddance, man. honestly.
I can't not think about the fucking video of Mariah Carey getting a reward from Stevie Wonder. Nobody guided. Mariah Carey forgot Stevie Wonder was blind and kind of just walked past him. And poor Stevie Wonder is trying to hand her the microphone.
Honestly, it was... It's not funny, but it was extremely funny. Because she went, she, I think there was that sort of like awkward moment when I think neither of them knew what to do.
Yeah.
So both of them like decided to do something. So Maria went to the front of the stage and Stevie went to grab a microphone to hand it to her and he just handed it into thin air. There's no one next to
it. No, it's such an important cultural time.
Oh gosh. Anyway.
Continue with Taylor.
Yeah. Let's get to her.
And we got to her already, but carry on. We got to her already, but carry on.
Yeah. There's still so much more. And I deleted some of my notes because I was collecting all the notes on that one day. Because then I wanted to bitch with Rage. And she was like, we can keep it for the tea. And I was like, yeah, great. I deleted half of it. Still, I have so much of it. So let's keep going.
Let's keep going.
It was Grammy Awards, right? So she, Grammys are one of the most like top notch awards, right? That's the like Oscar yeah, for like, music.
Yeah, they're the most like esteemed musician awards.
Yeah. So there are her peers, not her fans. Yeah, girly announced a new album there, and people in the in other musicians did not seem to enjoy that one for.
Well, no, understandable. Because as she accepted her award, she announced her album name. So she already knew she was going to win. And then she was like, anyway, I got to go post on Instagram.
Yeah. not
the award show.
Weird vibe she chose. So she started off by saying, this is my 13th Grammy or whatnot. When there is Beyonce, who still didn't won the Album of the Year award. Yeah. By the way, it was won by only 3 Black women in history, I think. And Taylor Swift has a 4th one. Miley That's Cyrus great. Won her first Grammy Award ever.
Like, objectively, Taylor Swift is not as strong a singer as most of her peers. Like, mm-hmm. We have to be honest, she doesn't have the vocal range. Her lyrics are often Instagram poetry vibes. Like, she makes some bangers. I won't deny that. I listened to a lot of her songs and she was in my top listened artist last year because clearly I'm mentally ill. but like, to pretend that she's more talented than she is very strange. And at this point, her fans are more of a cult. Like, they don't seem mm-hmm. to see reality where Absolutely. She's actually a white woman who got lucky and not a very considerate white woman for a self-proclaimed activist.
Absolutely. The name of her album is Tortured Poets Department. That's an album about her ex, Joe Alwyn. And he's in a group chat called Tortured Men Club. They broke up 2 years ago. I don't know, maybe even longer. I mean, once again, like, I find it very strange to, if I was with someone and they were next to me writing a song about their ex, I don't know. I don't think I would be so chilled about it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when she started, everybody was like, oh, she needs to write songs acknowledging that sometimes it's her fault. Like, oh my God, she's always writing songs about men. And at that point, yeah, like, it was a feminist issue where women couldn't write songs without being made to without being slut shamed and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But now she's on what, like, God knows how many albums, and she goes out of her way to make sure everybody knows which man she's writing mm-hmm. about of that time. Mm-hmm. And that's a weird thing to do. Like, her personal relationships are not personal.
It is really weird thing to do, especially when now Joe was like, I don't want to be in the narrative. And her cult was like, oh, because you know the dirt laundry will be aired and stuff like that. I'm like, honestly, the relationship ended years ago. Move mm-hmm. on.
And Joe Alwyn isn't like a very public man anyway. No. Like, I don't I don't know if he's on social media, but I rarely see anything about him online out of relation to Taylor Swift.
But that's the exact, like, the way her call is shaping the narrative is really fascinating, because when they were dating, they were like, oh my God, he protects her privacy. It's so nice. He's so considerate. And now, when she's seen partying a lot outside with her new boyfriend, they were like, oh my God, he was keeping her inside. Look how she's enjoying the life outside. Are you kidding me?
It's
honestly,
it's really weird, because, like, it's just, I don't get it. She's so idolized, and I don't know what, for what reason is she?
No.
She's not done anything good. Like, she probably more than anybody else in the industry right now has the platform to speak up on Palestine. She's already kind of moved away from the structures that were oppressing her as a musician, so she has nothing to lose on that front.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she won't lose her job, she won't lose her fans at that point. She's so fucking famous and so idolized that she could speak out about Palestine and make a real difference.
Not to mention that there are, it's proven that when she spoke for people to go vote for Biden, the numbers went much higher. She literally has the power to change outcome of the world. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Insane.
I can't imagine having a platform like that and being so complicit. Like, the award shows in general are pissing me off right now, because so, like, hardly any of them are using that platform and that opportunity to speak out about what's going on in the world. And it is very Hunger Games to see, like, all these elaborately dressed people on red carpets having a grand old time while a whole country is being genocided.
Well, there was a singer during the memoriam part, and she said, free Palestine, call for ceasefire or something like that. Her mic was cut off right after.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
So, like, it's absolutely ridiculous. Are you kidding me?
But they wouldn't cut off Taylor Swift's mic.
No. No.
There's no way. Like,
absolutely.
That's the thing. Like, if she spoke up and did something,
mm-hmm.
they know who to watch and who to oppress.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't oppress somebody that big now.
Yeah.
And I genuinely just can't imagine having that platform and not doing anything with it. Like, the amount of money she must have. The amount of people who, and people still excuse her actions. And it's like, this here is not a good person. She's not a good person.
And then she goes out to party and go on a Super Bowl with her boyfriend and is there and is literally everywhere, but she doesn't have time to do one single fucking Instagram post that would change outcome of the world. Are you honestly? Ugh, I just, that's why I am now certified Taylor Swift hater. I just hate her with burning passion.
And rightly so, I feel like, at this point. It's just, it's out of hand.
Yeah.
The amount, it's just weird. It's weird to be part of a society that's, it's just strange. Fans, she could, like, shit on a rhino or something and her fans would try and find a reason for that. And a good reason. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like, she could do the weirdest, most horrible shit ever and she would be allowed to.
Anyway.
Another thing that annoys me is that everybody keeps fan casting her as Evelyn Hugo. Evelyn Hugo is a Cuban woman who was made to look like a white woman in the books. And even Taylor Jenkins Reid, like, kind of added to that with a tweet, like, supporting it. And I was like, I don't trust that author anyway, because a lot of people have called her a Zionist. I haven't looked into why that is. And I can't pretend I don't enjoy her books. But that's a weird thing to do, man. That's just a weird thing to do. Yeah. Like,
I guess there's not enough blonde women to cast her as. What other fun stuff you have to spill?
Oh my goodness. Well, remember Kate Corain? How could I forget? She review bombed all her fellow debuts, all targeted, all of them people of color, and then she tried to blame it on an imaginary woman called Lily and faked a Discord chat between her and Lily. And then she blamed it on addiction and mental health and said she was going to rehab or something. And she was dropped by a publisher and agent and whatnot. Rightly so. Well, she came back. Somebody talked to her from the Daily Beast, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And the author of the article clearly was kind of just relaying what Kate said, but didn't seem to agree with what she said. But this time she blamed her actions on autism, which is great. So she's just like, well, I've blamed two stigmatized things, addiction and mental illness. Now I'm going to go for neurodivergence as well. That can be blamed for my appalling racist actions. So that was great. And then the same day, those authors who were targeted started noticing those accounts, more accounts, review bombing them again. So either, yeah. So either Kate Corain decided to got out of rehab and fired up the old Goodreads, or she has some like sympathizer copycats out there, which is why there's been two articles posted that allows her to be sympathized with. Mm. And that's why that's damaging, because there's been no articles for the authors targeted who lost out and whose livelihoods could be affected by what happened. So, yeah. I don't know where she'll go from here. I wonder if, you know, like, if the industry will have her back, or if she'll kind of write under a pen name in the future. But she's clearly just not a good person. Like, being autistic does not make you a racist. And it certainly does not give you the energy to make several good... Like, I'm telling you now... I'm mentally ill and I'm autistic, and if I had enough energy to open Goodreads and create several accounts and review bomb a lot of people, I actually would just go outside, touch some grass, and enjoy my life again. Like, mm-hmm. being disabled actually is a very hard thing to do, and it doesn't usually drive you to do something so time and energy consuming,
mm-hmm.
and something so vindictive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's that. And then the final drama, Bride by Ali Hazelwood, which you're reading, got a special edition cover illustrated by Leni Kaufman, who's a very, very talented artist and has illustrated, like, Icebreaker, Baby Moon or Bust, I want to say.
What? Delilah.
Yeah, Baby Moon, the pregnant woman on the cover. And the Delilah Green Doesn't Care trilogy. She's very good. She's very talented. Olivia Dade, she's done her newest one, mm-hmm. I think. But the special edition cover looks nothing like the original and looks very same. Like, you can't deny that these covers all look pretty similar to each other. Like, the characters are cartoons. They're looking ahead, not at each other. Then usually not even touching. They're usually blonde, skinny girlies and tall men. And the only thing to indicate that this would be a paranormal romance, which it is, and which the first cover conveys perfectly, is mm-hmm. that there's a wolf in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So people had things to say about that. I had things to say about it, because, like, publishers are clearly not working hard to, like, give authors an edge or a voice. They'd rather just do what's been done already to get more money in from fans of that, which I get it, it's a business, but it's also pretty shit and devalues the content a lot, because, and also it's very misleading. Like, first of all, somebody said in the thread that I was tweeting in that they thought that these books were all by the same author, because, like, they're such similar styles that they just assumed it was all the same author. And they also could very easily be mistaken for, like, young adult stuff. And they usually have a lot of steamy content inside.
Yeah.
So I had something to say about it. I don't like the way that romance is kind of being reduced to this one kind of cover. And if you don't have that cover by that artist, then you're less likely to be a bestseller. And then it blew up because apparently people were being mean to Lena Kaufman about her art. I didn't see that.
I saw a lot of it.
Okay, fair enough.
It was on my timeline, a lot of it. I think, like, you can always expect when some of this drama happens, when, like, people are talking about issues in publishing, that very quickly someone will try to be edgy and turn it personal. Like, every single time that happened. And I keep seeing a lot of the negative things. Like, the personal ones, yeah.
Yeah, and that's fair. Like, I would be pissed off too, but somebody else said, like, authors are never allowed to respond to criticism. Like, when we get bad reviews, we're not allowed. So, it, like, to kind of sway the conversation from what was about the publishing industry as a whole and the romance genre and the way that it's kind of been affected by these very samey covers to just narrowing it down to, like, the personal attack and making people feel guilty for having an opinion on a very famous author's cover was a very weird thing. I don't know, like, she had a right to tweet about it, I guess, but, like, it kind of swayed from the point that people were trying to make in the first place.
Yeah, but that's once again, it's because, like, people take it to a completely different level that is just...
Like, that's what book Twitter is like. Yeah, I don't know. And then it's a very complex situation. Like, I'm not necessary. I just thought, you know, she's hired by the Big Five quite often. I'm sure she'll be okay if a few people don't like her art. Like, I know that's very, like, insensitive to say, but, like, if I was a best-selling author and people said I was terrible at it, I wouldn't really care if I was getting in money and being successful. I don't know, like,
I don't know. I guess once again, like, art is such a personal thing.
It is such a personal.
Yeah, and it's not very easy to hold on to because there's always gonna be someone who's sort of gonna take over soon, which I'm pretty sure is gonna happen. So I get that if she panicked a little bit,
Look, I get it. I can't pretend that I wouldn't react and be upset if it was me. But again, like, most of the big majority of it, I must follow the right people because all the tweets that I saw was just a commentary on the industry. And then people was taking that as an attack on Ali Hazelwood, or using it as an excuse to attack Ali Hazelwood. And, like, it's just, like, once again, female authors, women authors, romance authors, just have to have, there's just an opinion on everything. Like, my issue was with the way the publishers were handling certain things. And, like, just for me, it's like we're trying so hard to make a diverse space in the romance genre with queer characters and stuff. So I just think publishers should try a little bit harder to make diverse covers in that vein instead of just hiring the same. Not even hiring the same artist, but just the way that it's the same style with the same poses and the same faces.
Just, like, before Bright even came out, like, a week before that, I've already seen so much hate about, like, directed towards Ellie. Just on TikTok, when people were reading her book and they were, like, getting, like, early copies and bitching about it already. And I'm really tired of it because, like, there's so much negativity every single time. And I'm like, these books are such a, like, they make me feel so much joy because they're just so fun and adorable. And every single time someone hates on it just because she came from fiction and because she's a woman who writes, like, are the best books in the world? No, but they make me feel good to shut the fuck up. That's one thing.
You don't have to be the best books in the world. Like, not every book has to be a literary masterpiece. Sometimes it's just about two people falling in love.
Yeah, and I don't want to read literary masterpieces. They're so difficult for my brain.
That's because literary masterpieces are always considered to be pretentious, flowery writing made by men who think they have achieved a higher plane of existence and consciousness by saying, like, cringy, like, poetic shit and using... a thesaurus. That's the thing, like, how we consider books is actually very much framed by like male masculinity and the classics that we've grown up with, such as like F. Scott Fitzgerald and stuff.
Hell yeah. And about the covers, I really like the original cover or like for the actual book because it's so vibey. It's so vibey. The same with like God, what was it by S.T. Gibson?
Oh yeah,
it sets the vibes absolutely perfectly.
And that's what a book cover is supposed to do. And that's why people were annoyed because the original cover was gorgeous. And yeah, this is only a special edition. It doesn't matter too much if it doesn't match or not. But like, I personally think it still should. Like, it's sending a different message. Mm. And I don't get why you would stray so far from it. Like, because then it really doesn't match the content.
Yeah.
Because like on the first cover you see that the woman has fangs. Like, it's very clear that this is a paranormal romance. There's a moon and a wolf. Ivy has it for those watching YouTube. And then the special edition cover, she just looks like a blonde woman. She doesn't give vampire vibe. She's wearing a nice flowery dress. Mm-hmm. The man's just kind of standing there, doesn't look particularly powerful. Wolf's hovering in a background, could just be a nice big old dog. Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. That's why we were initially upset, or like, well, why I was initially upset, because this obsession with like following the market and it's just watering down what could be so something really good.
Yeah.
And that's nothing, again, like, that's nothing on Ali Hazelwood. Like I said in the thread as well, you don't actually get to choose all the time what covers look like. I know that I certainly didn't when Summer at the Scottish Castle was being produced. I had to keep asking for the character on the cover to look bigger because she was a plus size woman. And even now, she can still be passed off as a slim woman. Mm. Like, you just don't always get that choice as an author. It's really about how the publishers want to sell it. And I just don't think they're doing justice to some really great books, whether you think they're good or just Wattpad shit or what, which is wrong, by the way. Like, I don't think they're doing justice to a really important genre.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then one more thing I also have to mention. I don't think we've talked about it last time because I'm really upset about it still a little bit. There was a writer, Lucina Kahn something. She's having her second book out. The first was like The Brightest Place or something. And the second book is a romance between ballerina and her physical therapist. And someone posted a fake page of the book.
Yeah.
And it was really, it was like horrible, but kind of clearly that it's like meant to be a joke.
Mm-hmm.
People took it seriously. And it did, I feel like there must have been such a bad damage to like her name and her brand just because of it. Because on the same day when I went to TikTok, I saw some really big creators talking about like, see, and now this is why it's damaging to do this and that. And I'm like, but it's fucking fake. Are you kidding me? So, and I honestly would absolutely have like a complete fucking breakdown if someone did that to me. Honestly. I can imagine. Like, it's her second book. She writes silly little romances that are supposed to be like cute and stuff and whatnot.
The titles don't make no damn sense. Like, the second book's title was something like, I don't know, like, Tears of Sonos. I don't know. Yeah, like,
I don't know. But then we have Samantha Young, who is always you, about you, you and me.
Oh, yeah.
Me and you and stuff like that. So, I mean,
yeah, but that's the thing. Like, just because it doesn't necessarily sound like the best book in the world, and like, it might be a little bit not
if
to
it's
everybody's
not for
taste.
You, that's fucking fine. But it also like has you think how people view romance if they actually believed it.
Absolutely. Like, it's not like they just, it's that bad that they have to make fun of it. Like, people are always waiting for the opportunity to make fun of and devalue the genre. Like, it was the same thing with the romance, fantasy, romantasy, erotica debate the other week that we talked about in the last episode. Mm-hmm. Like, genres predominantly led by men, never get that kind of flack. Like, I can name loads of like crime books that all have the same cover and stuff.
Yeah.
Or have
stupid title or whatever, or a premise or whatever, but it's just normal. Like that's literature, and we're just, I don't know.
And not to mention the constant like bitching about enemies to lovers in like our normal word setting. Like, it's not that fucking deep. I don't know. I work in a corporate offices. I had my enemies there. They weren't hot, so I didn't have desire to fuck them. Maybe things were different if they were hot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there are people that I actually despise and wanted to throw off the window.
Yeah.
Like, and so what? So what?
It really pisses me off. I know. It just doesn't make any fucking sense. No. Like, if a book is set in a corporate setting and it says enemies to lovers, no, there's not going to be any fucking swords or a rival between clans or whatever you expect in a fantasy book. You can put it in the context of that setting and assume they just don't really like each other.
No, that's what it is. It's about context.
Context.
Americans refuse to see it because they think their country is the entire fucking world.
Yeah.
Oh,
I do agree that like other terms would be better, but the readers are the ones who built this community. Yeah. Build like this business on tropes, on how tropes work. So if people are using those tropes in like hyperbolic ways to make it sell, then they're gonna do that because they need readers. That's how the business works.
And also, like, it's not, I don't think it's ever meant to be literal. Like, to me, that never was meant to be literal. It's the same thing, like, if you see three shades of blue and you're gonna name all of them blue, no one's gonna fucking go after you to punch you in the face because it's turquoise and not blue. Like, are you kidding me?
Exactly, man. Oh,
I always get so enraged because it's honestly, it makes me feel so like a very specific way of desperate because I keep seeing this unnecessary hate and negativity.
No, yeah, that's what it is. It's unnecessary. Yeah. It's like people are always going out of their way to make romance authors feel like they don't belong in their own community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's, I just don't get it. Like, I don't know anybody who hates creators more than readers hate authors.
Mm-hmm.
On book Twitter especially, like, why do they hate authors so fucking much? Why are they there just to make fun of everything?
Yeah, and same with TikTok. Like, that all the time, I keep seeing, why I DNF this book? What, my five top most hated books of last year?
Yeah.
Why?
Authors have to be on social media in this day and age to sell themselves because let me tell you, publishers are not doing it for us anymore. They don't market us the way that they might have once. They expect us to have an online presence. Mm-hmm. So if you're just going on those spaces to bitch about authors are going to see it and we don't want to see it, but it's so widespread at the minute that we don't have a choice and we're expected to not react.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point we will.
Yeah, when one of the romance authors was like, I don't want to be tagged in reviews that are like 3 stars. And people were like, oh, you think 3-star review is bad? And we're piling on her because of it. Like, because she said she didn't want to be tagged in the reviews. And they hated her for it. Are you kidding me?
That's the thing. You can't win. Because if she would have reacted to a 3-star review, people would be like, well, why are you reading your reviews? Like, you just can't win. Like, it's very frustrating to be part of. And I do think, as a queer author, you can avoid it a little bit more, or I've been able to, because I have a lot of queer readers, queer author friends, who all have a similar take, and we're not, like, necessarily next in that, like, traditional romance scene. But it's still just exhausting to see it every fucking day, like... There's no right way to do anything.
No, and it honestly, China, just me, like, seeing it is really chipping away at me because it has the power to ruin my day just because I get so upset.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how many people I block, how many times I put, I don't want to see something similar. It doesn't matter. I'll see it every single day, nonetheless. Same with fucking Taylor Swift.
I get her on the everywhere.
Honestly,
she's everywhere. She's
everywhere. And, like, especially when it's about things that bring you joy, which is such it's not easy commodity to get.
It isn't.
And, like, when you like something and it brings you joy and it's not necessarily, like, extremely problematic, like, how many things are.
Yeah.
It really, like, I honestly, I want to cry now because It's so exhausting. It's so exhausting.
It is. And it, as from an author's perspective, like, how do we write when there's, when you're constantly exposed to that? Like, because everything's wrong. So how do you write in the hopes that you'll become part of the industry and get published and have a career out of it? When all you're exposed to all the time is negative feedback on every single thing, every harmless trope, like, there's just, you feel like you're always going to do something wrong or that something that people won't like, even when it's a really, like, superficial thing.
I recently, well, it's a while ago, but it's still in my head. I saw someone say that, like, Gen Z and this entire generation, they're, like, very pro, let's save the world. But when it comes to individuals, they're ruthless. Like, they will like, murder you with words. And I cannot, like, stop seeing that. Because, yeah, they will fight for your rights. But then, to your face, they will, like, absolutely destroy you.
Yeah.
And they're always, like, yay, mental health. But again, like, absolutely destroy you. And it's really... I don't know. It's really difficult.
I think social media in general has a lot to blame for it, a lot to answer for, because obviously you was never meant to be, like, a few like generations ago, people were just reading the fucking newspaper. That's the only way they got their news.
Yeah, once a day.
And yeah, they didn't have, like, constant news channels. They didn't have social media. They weren't scrolling all the fucking time. They got on with their day, and they didn't have to know what was happening all the time.
Even when it came to us, like, internet was a place, and there was that one physical computer in your living room. Like, that was one place. And then you turned it off, and you moved on, and you were out of it. Now with your phone, you're constantly on it. You're constantly in it. And it's really difficult to be able to live in that.
It is. So, like, just so many opinions. And you're right about, like, the individual thing. Because even when things started ramping up with Palestine, I saw more threads about people who were problematic, people, authors who support Israel, and some of them weren't even correct, that, like, trying to just find reasons to hate random authors than focusing on the fact that a whole culture is dying in front of us. And I get, like, we need to hold people accountable when we can, but I don't feel like that's a productive way to spend your time when you could be amplifying the voices instead of making the attention on famous Western people.
And it was every time something happens, and it keeps happening every fucking week. I see more tweets being like, if you're not talking about it, you're a piece of shit, more than actually talking about it.
Yeah.
That's what I find about most of the things is when someone, like, I see five fucking tweets in a row saying I'm a piece of shit because I don't talk about it. I don't know what's happening. And honestly, sadly, I live in a country that is very pro-Israeli. Like, and most of the things don't even get to our news and our, like, websites and articles. And all information I got was from Twitter, and thank fuck, because I have the luxury of speaking English.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I know my dad doesn't speak English. I know he's watching Czech news. I know his view. I know what he's getting. And it's actually kind of difficult to do that. So I will not call him piece of shit just because he doesn't know, because he didn't get the information.
Well, that's the thing.
That's
like
a very systematic issue.
Yeah, the whole world was designed that way on purpose. Like, you can't know things if you're not given access to that information. Yeah. And yet in an ideal world, everybody would actively go out and search for the correct information and listen to the people affected. But that's just not the reality. Like, a lot, like, everybody is an individual and has their own lives, and we're like, it's shit, and people can be really self-absorbed, but that's just the way it is. Like, that's the way the world has been designed to make us. Like, we're very lucky that we do kind of get that information to us. I didn't know anything about Palestine until, like, my early 20s, I want to say.
Same.
And I'd never really felt passionate about it because I still didn't only knew, like, the basics until recently. Like, it's a thing that kind of grows as more attention comes to it. And it, But that's the thing. We never hold the right people accountable or responsible. Like, we'll blame an individual for not retweeting a tweet instead of, like, blaming a whole corporation for being for donating money to fund the war. Like,
It was the same thing during pandemic, during, like, the rise of Black Lives Movement. It was the same exact thing. Like, we all know that it's very much a systematic issue, but instead of focusing on what to change in the system, we focus once again which celebrity tweeted this picture. That's not the way.
And yeah, you should expect more from celebrities because they have the platform. Mm-hmm. But like, pick your battles as well. Like, I'm going to battle Taylor Swift because she is literally the most famous woman in the world right now. But like, I'm not going to waste all my time wishing she would say stuff about Palestine. I'm just going to keep retweeting what I see. And if you are looking for, like, updates and, you know, to amplify the voices, I would recommend following Bisan from Palestine. She was a reporter and TikToker before all of this and still is. And she doesn't just share all the bad things. She shares a lot of her culture as well.
Anyway, that once again took a turn.
We always jump so far.
My cheeks are really hot because I got really upset.
But I get it.
You can see it a little bit. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Don't forget, our release list will be going out on the 1st of March. Yeah. And we're still posting articles. We posted one recently by Katie Hay. Mm-hmm. And we're doing interviews, and you can donate to our Ko-fi if you like, or you can join our Discord server. But remember to support women's rights.
But most importantly, support women's wrongs, unless they are in Taylor Swift's cult.
Or our Taylor Swift.
We shall see you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile.
Thank you for listening to Swords and Sapphics. You can enjoy a new episode every Wednesday.
While waiting, you can visit our website, swordsandsapphics.com, and find lots of articles, interviews, and guest pieces.
Feel free to contact us with any requests, questions, or inquiries through a form on our website or directly to our email, swordsandsapphicspodcast@gmail.com.